I'm John Aran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Under 30 seconds to go. Played out again toward the empty net. This one's on target! And it's swept away by Tkachuk at the last moment. But McDavid scores! Connor McDavid with 17.3 to go sends this series back to Alberta. They will indeed drag the Cats back to Edmonton for a game six.
It's Gabe Ramirez here on 670 The Score. Connor McDavid trying to do some magic tonight. The problem is he had some magic to get it to game six. Game six came. My boy didn't do anything in game six. So, of course, you're asking yourself, is it this, you know, is this the game, right? He had a game off, didn't score a goal, you know, didn't do much in the game six. Game seven come through. Could make a big difference today. But, man, if Edmonton comes back after being down 3-0, that's insane. And so earlier today, so I'm working on Stadium now. It's a company that, you know, produces content, you know, across the country. And they film out of the United Center. So we were doing a show today called Clubhouse. It was myself, Joshua Perry, former Ohio State Buckeye, played football over there. And then it was Robbie Hummel, played for the Timberwolves, went to Purdue, really good guy. We did our show today, and we had this topic that we were talking about, and it was, you know, what were some of the biggest fails, like, or the biggest comebacks, I guess, whatever, half glass half full or half empty, however you want to look at it. What were some of those, and where would this rank? Now, we had some names on there, Robbie. Not Robbie Hummel, but Robbie Triano producing today. And if you could think of some good ones, phone lines are open. Text line is open. 312-644-6767. Can you take a guess? What was the number one spot for us?
I'm going to guess the Cavs over the Warriors when they were down 3-1.
Okay, so Joshua Perry, Ohio kid, was talking about, you know, the Cavs comeback. But me, I'm a LeBron realist, which is that he's not the greatest player ever to live. And so I came in with my Jordan hate. And then Robbie Hummel agreed with me. And so that one actually got dropped all the way down to fourth. That one was number four on the list.
That's wild.
312-644-6767. You could text in or you can call. Phone lines are open. Best comeback. I'll tell you what some of them were. So in our pre-show meeting, even though I'm a Sox fan, I had to throw Cleveland Indians being down 3-1 to the Cubs. But that was even down there on the list. Like, that was like number five on the list.
What was that like in the city? Like, were people here actually nervous about everything happening?
I mean, Cubs were down 3-1 and people just thought it's the Cubs in the World Series, just, you know. But then when the Cubs started winning, it was electrifying. It was electrifying being here in the city during that run. And so at the time, I was doing the morning show at B96. And so obviously we're all owned by the same company. And so all of us were broadcasting from Wrigley Field during the World Series run, like promoting, like, hey, listen on The Score, listen on The Score, listen on The Score. So for me, it was amazing because I was able to be there, you know, while it was happening. But I mean, from the, you know, if obviously if I'm getting there, you know, from four in the morning, it was nonstop pandemonium over there in Wrigley Field. Somebody's from 815 said, this is in regards to the ball being thrown back. The stairs are a little steep and my friend was having balance issues. Somebody had to latch onto the, I don't know. I thought that was something else about the thing right there. Threw me off, buddy. But continuing on, that was not number one, Robbie Triano. I'll tell you what was the Falcons and the Patriots, 28-3. That, to me, was the biggest comeback or the biggest, you know, like, that one was the best one to me. That one lived up there. You don't seem impressed. You don't seem like that one moved the needle for you.
It was amazing at the time, but it is Tom Brady. Like, I could say the same about LeBron, but that's multiple games.
Yeah.
This is Tom Brady in one game.
Well, that's what great players do, you know? So that was great. But I said on the stadium, I was a LeBron hater today on TV. And I was like, you know, he was like, you talking about the greatest player ever? Of course he came back. I said, you know what? The greatest player would never be down 3-1 in the finals. And he wasn't. Jordan was never down 3-1 in the finals. Do you think it's Jordan or LeBron?
Are we going there?
No, I'm just quickly curious for your thoughts, because you don't seem to be feeling my LeBron hate nor my Atlanta Falcons over the Patriots.
I appreciate both. I mean, obviously, I'm a Jordan guy, but I appreciate both. But yeah. I still think LeBron is excellent at
his
job.
I don't think he's a bad basketball player.
To do it against Steph Curry, to do it against Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, that entire team.
Draymond Green got ejected and got suspended.
But still, it's Steph Curry in the prime of Steph Curry. That's where, and you had to do that multiple times.
Do you remember when LeBron James would guard Derrick Rose in the playoffs because he was just an elite defender and he would shut him down because he was just bigger? Like, most people expected to happen. But LeBron would just say, oh, Steph, I got him. I'm going to shut him down. Same way I did with Derrick Rose. And we're going to win these games. They had Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade, like the super team, also with LeBron James in his prime, what we're talking about here. So it's I don't know. I thought it was a good comeback. It was impressive, but it didn't shock me. I didn't feel like, oh my God, I can't believe he did that. It was like, wow, this would be embarrassing if you lose. You guys better start playing hard and win these games.
Has there been a famous Chicago choke or a moment in your history as a fan where you tell me, hey, don't bring that up?
In Cubs history, that's the one that stands out the most to me would be the Moises Alou, you know, Steve Bartman, being that close to moving on to the next round and then, you know, obviously it all crumbling before your eyes. And I think even as a Sox fan, you're still appreciative of good baseball in the city because what it does to the citizens of Chicago and the Chicagoland area. So that'd be a good one. I think for the Bears, it'd be letting the Packers win that last game of the season to let them sneak into the playoffs that one season where they went on to win the Super Bowl. That one hurts, right? Bulls. Bulls, to me, those ones come in the form of injuries in the middle of a series where you're winning. If it's like Lou Alden getting hurt in the middle of a Bulls-Cavs series or Derrick Rose going down in that Sixers series, like those are the ones that hurt in terms of team allowing teams to come back then as a result of it. White Sox, nah, I'm just there. We're there with the White Sox.
So for the Bears, has there been a comeback loss, or is it just the double doink that hurts the most?
Comeback loss, not one that you can text in if you can remember one. The double doink one, I told you I was there. The way the story goes is, I'm wasted. I think we're going to the playoffs. Or excuse me, I think we're going to the next round. And then I foolishly go to one knee to not watch, to add drama, you know? I'm like, I can't watch this, but I'm faded. And so I'm just kind of like hyping up the moment. I'm with my buddies. I can't watch this. I can't believe this. I can't believe this. And then I hear everyone go, ah, and I look, it goes to the uprights, but someone called a timeout. And so I was like, ah, and as the timeout was finished, they're going back on. As I'm going back down to like recreate this, I don't want to watch thing that I was doing. Before I could get all the way down, I hear, ah, and I was like, what? What happened? And they're like, he missed. And I'm like, what? What? I won't tell you what happened between me and an Eagles fan after the game, but there's a story there too. If you ever see me in person on the streets,
asking you in the commercial break.
Yeah. Ask me about me and the Eagles game. And how that thing ended up turning, or Eagles fan after the game, that was tough. So yeah, those are tough. I like the fact that somebody helped me out from the 815. So for the Bears, it was definitely the loss against Washington the year after they won the Super Bowl. Okay, I can't speak on that, but I believe you. Except for the Cubs, it was 1984 against the Padres, up 2-0. All right. Again, I can't speak on those, but I appreciate you.
What's also kind of sad is that Chicago hasn't had that many moments prior because they haven't been there a lot recently.
Yes, Robbie, we know. We suck.
I'm from Detroit. I don't have those moments either.
Yeah, you're right. And it's good to think about, but, you know, again, when you're talking about all-timers, you know, locally, yeah, those don't exist. You know, except for, like I said, Cubs, Indians. I'm sure some people would probably put that up there as, you know, a miraculous comeback. There was one other one that made the board. It was five of them. Damn it. It's Packers, it's Cleveland. It was, I can't remember right now. But I think for me, again, I go back to the Falcons game, and I think to myself, like, the reason why it was so incredible, because 28-3 at halftime, you think the game is over. Like, over. You could think a series is over, but you still got to play the game. 28-3 at halftime, you the assumption is that it's over. The game is over, and there's not going to be anything else that you can possibly do to get back.
Another one, too, is the Red Sox, Yankees, 2004.
That's what it was. That's what it was. 2004. That's why it was number two, because I said they went on to win the World Series. And so I was like, and then they went on to win the World Series. I was trying to bring it down initially because it wasn't in the World Series. But then I said they went on to go win it for the first time in 100 years. So that was epic. So yes, thank you, Robbie. That's what it was. It was Falcons, Patriots 1, Yankees, Red Sox 2, Cubs, Indians 3, Warriors, Cavaliers 4. Yeah, man. It happens. Somebody just texted in Blackhawks game 7, 2014. Okay. That one was good to watch. Watching Kaner do that one. Oh, man. It was fun on TV today. TV is a different animal. It's way easier than radio. I'll tell you that. It's 30 minutes. You get commercial breaks in between. There's other people talking. It's all laid out for you. Happens quickly. Marshall Harris, who was just on with Spiegs, he'll say the same thing. TV's just like that. Radio, you got to be out here like going for 20 minutes straight talking. Oh, there goes my headphones. It's just a lot. But you know what? That's why we do it, man. We absolutely love it. And we are going to continue to do it. Check it out. On the other side, we're going to talk a little bit of Cubs. Of course, they're going to be starting at 9:05. Pregame begins at 8:30. Pat and Ron got the call. Zach Xavier with the pregame. You probably saw 8:45 as the start of the game, but there's a pregame ceremony happening. So it gets pushed out a little bit more. Bad enough that it's happening on the West Coast, and we got to get, you know, wait for some late night baseball. Going to be tired tomorrow at work in the next couple of days. But again, that's starting at 8:30. I'm leading you right into that. Will Perdue going to be on the show at 7:40 to talk some Bulls basketball. So when we come back, I'll tell you, I want to talk a little bit about Pete Crow Armstrong. I feel like he's exactly what Steve Phillips, our guest earlier in the show, was talking about, right? These blender guys. I know people want Pete Crow Armstrong to be the aircraft carrier, like he pointed it out. But I'm wondering if you're content with what PCA has done, specifically over the weekend. We'll go over some of his at-bats and some of his missed defensive plays. We'll talk about it right after the break. Don't go anywhere. It's Gabe Ramirez right here on 670 The Score.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's frustrating is as soon as the team gets down early and there's a couple runs scored against them, it feels like it's 10-0. It feels like the fight is gone. And you know, when you think about the starting pitching, that's been, you know, the all-star of the first half. You know, they've been tremendous. So very frustrating to watch a team on a really special day come out a little flat.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, with Sandberg, you know, statue and all that, his day. So, I don't know, it just seems like every time the team gets down, they sort of feel like they're out of the game as opposed to what we saw yesterday. Sure. That's the fight that I thought this team was about, and it's just not there consistently.
Cliff Floyd talking about the Chicago Cubs after their game yesterday. Cubs fell to the New York Mets 5-2. And he did mention it, like, hey, man, when they come out, kind of like a gut punch to the Chicago Cubs. Can they get the fight back? And I think I agree with that, but then it's also the players understand that their bullpen is not the best. And so if they're down 4-0, they got to battle back to get those runs. And I don't know if they're, Yeah, I'm sure. Of course, they have the confidence in their bullpen. They're teammates. They love those guys. But Cliff Floyd pointed some stuff out as a foreign player. He understands, you know, what's going on there. But there are people that are trying their best to contribute to a winning Chicago Cubs organization. And one player in particular is Pete Carrera Armstrong. Now, you know, one of the producers here at The Score, Sean Sears, I have a special place in my heart. He's like, you know, the dorky little brother that, you know what I mean, you feel bad for. No, Sean knows I love him. So he and I text often about Pete Carrera Armstrong. Pete will come up, runners in scoring position, he'll drop the ball. Then I'll text Sean and be like, I almost was a fan. And then he didn't come through. And then he'll make a catch and Sean will text me that he's getting his swagger back. That's great. But as you're watching this weekend, you know, there were a few moments, even defensively, where I thought to myself, isn't Pete supposed to be making a lot of these plays? Isn't that why he's up here? I mean, even during the broadcast, they're calling him, you know, an elite level defender, which I'm not disagreeing with. I am just saying elite level defenders make elite level defenders take away hits. Elite level defenders help out your pitcher to secure more outs throughout the course of a game. And there were some things that, again, I just looked at it and I was like, okay. First of all, this, and I want to be fair, because I do want to hear, you know, like I want to hear from the Pete Carrera Armstrong fans that are like, hey, Gabe, cut him some slack. I want to hear what that sounds like for you. But I also want to hear from people that maybe, you know, are early on the naysaying of Pete Carrera Armstrong, at least in the present. 312-644-6767. The phone lines are open. I want to hear you gush. I want to hear you gloat. Or I want to hear you throw some crow on his name. See what I did there?
Oh, my God.
The stand-up triple was wild. Okay? How about this? A stand-up triple is wild. He pulled that one off over the weekend. Just looked like, you know, oh, my goodness. Like a speed demon out there. But Saturday, first inning, no dive on a catch. Then Sunday, first inning, no dive in the first inning on a catch, where I felt those were opportunities for him to put on a show, right? Especially if the bat's not working out the way you want it to. He had the put out on Sunday that was absolutely, I mean, I felt like that could have been one that he could have gotten to as well. And that's why, I forgot who was on second, but that's why the runner was holding up at first. And when he saw that it was going to drop, that's when he made the attempt to get to third. Pete throws a bullet, gets him out on the one hop. Great play there. But like, is this a Moncada or a Morel situation where you deal with what you got, right? You're like, PCA, we're going to deal with it because we know he can steal bases. He's a demon on the base paths. We know he can track down a ball, you know, but you're willing to deal with some of the other things. I mean, they pinched hit him for him in the bottom of the ninth for Patrick Wisdom. I understand it was a lefty coming up with Jake Diekman, but it's Jake Diekman. We're not talking about, I mean, yes, his ERA, he's pitching well this year. That I do understand. I guess I'm just still torn over him and how he pitched for the White Sox. But situations like that. Fifth inning, comes in, makes a nice sliding catch. That was a nice one. But he went down looking in the sixth. Looking. Outside corner. Severino painted the corner. It was a beautiful pitch. But again, I mean, these are the things. It's like one of those, you know, up and down moments. Let's go out to the phone line. Again, I'm curious. Thoughts on PCA in the present. What you thinking about? Let's go to, is this real? Do I have to say this? Two Iron from South Bend. What's going on, Dos?
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
I'm doing good, man. Talk to me about PCA, because I want to believe in the hype that everyone has for him. But I'm a guy that watches the game a lot, right? So I'm watching the game and I don't see it. I see him being just like everybody else in that lineup, where there are moments of brilliance and then there are moments of downs, and the inconsistency is the only thing that is consistent.
And see, I totally agree with you there, because I want to like him, and I do to a certain point, but I watch every game like you do. And last night when he gets the count to 3-2, and it was like seventh inning or something like that, and there's one out, and he swings I mean, he needs to be on base, right? We all know he needs to just get on base, right? The old money ball. What do you do? He gets on base. Well, I don't like that guy. He gets on base. Just get on base with that speed, right? Then you can do something. So he swings at that curve slide. It just wasn't even close, right? And he swings at it. It's just, come on, man. Just have some eye, right? And I see it. I see it too much. So that's number one. Number two, if I see him making any more of those too cool for school one hand catches, he's going to drop one of those, and it's going to hit off the heel. And I'm just waiting for that to happen. I mean, I'm not seeing use two hands all the time, but Jesus criminy.
No, two iron. I know what you mean. It's like when you're watching an outfielder, especially an MLB outfielder, you want them perfect balance, lined up, shoulder squared, hand under there. Like, you want it to just look mechanical. And there are a couple moments where PCA is tracking a ball and he might be doing like the salsa out there. You know what I mean? He might just look like the feet are shuffling.
Right. And I know he went back down and he hit great. And I just think it looks like he's, you know, he's not, just make contact with the ball. I mean, you know, hey, let's make another movie reference. I mean, Major League. I mean, you run.
Serrano?
You run like Hayes, but you hit like crap, right? I mean, just get the ball in the infield and beat it out, right? I mean, just make contact with it. And more often than not, those guys are going to, you know, just make a play, right?
Yeah, man, you saw even like Christopher Morel do it during yesterday's game as well, right? Just like getting the bat on the ball, ended up pushing it up the middle. And he made something happen. And then what happens from there? You build a little confidence. Bat touches the ball. You're on base. And now you can crush a homer. Like, things like that. You got to build that momentum in those situations.
Totally agree. 100% agree.
Appreciate it.
Anyway, just had a call.
Yeah, love it, man. Thanks for the call, too, Iron. I appreciate it. I mean, listen. Again, I want to be on board. I want to be there. I want to say, oh my goodness, we have, you know, top three center fielders in baseball playing here in Chicago. I get to watch them. I get to talk about them. The problem is, and I talk about this often here on the radio, is that, you know, we as fans, and I'm not saying PCA isn't that. What I'm saying is we as fans in Chicago, regardless of the sport, far too often lift the pedestal a bit higher than we should, quicker than we should. And it's not that the person shouldn't be on a pedestal. It's not that we can't see with the naked eye the talent that can be. But I think far too often we just put an unnecessary pressure on players. And then you know what ends up happening as a result of it? And this happens probably more in like football, but you know, it happens in every sport. These people are human. They are human. They're not, this is not a video game. You don't gas somebody up and then they go out and do it. No, it puts this unnecessary pressure on the player. And then you know what they do as a result of it before the season starts? They feel themselves. Keenan Allen says the Bears have a top five defense and the Bears are walking around, you know, in their mind thinking that's the case. And every fan that they see on the street is telling them that they're a future Hall of Famer. Tyreek Stevenson, oh my God. Have you seen him play the cornerback position? Jalen Johnson is nice, but Tyreek, next couple of years, woo! I mean, like, it's like the pressure that we put. So, like, Pete Carmstrong, I remember doing a show, a morning show. I was filling in for Mully. It's me and Hall, and I'm okay with this. Or no, actually, I was filling in for Hall, so it was Mully and I. And, you know, they were talking about how Pete Carmstrong is going to be, like, you know, the greatest thing in Chicago in, like, a year. I think it was, like, next year or 2 years from now. Who's going to be the greatest athlete in Chicago? Like, Pete Carmstrong. It's like, what? That's an immense amount of pressure to put on somebody. Too bad nobody knew Caleb Williams was going to be in Chicago in a couple of years.
Do you feel like they're rushing his excellence, though?
No, absolutely not. Get him to the show. Because that's just it. He's good enough. Pete Carmstrong is good enough, right? I think, again, the issue more so is the expectations that are placed on him. It cannot be get Pete Carmstrong up here so that then he can save the season. So we can see him be the best center fielder in Major League Baseball. That cannot be the expectation. But you get him up here because he can contribute. You would love for him to be a rotational piece in the outfield as opposed to a mainstay where you're trying to fix things, right? You want Cody to be your, you know, everyday center fielder and occasionally play first base. Not, hey, we got Pete Carmstrong, so let's rotate Belly so that way we can keep him fresh. Like, no. You would love for it to be a situation where you can work him into it. But it's easier said than done. Talking about Pete Carmstrong here on 670 The Score, Gabe Ramirez with you. Taking you all the way to 8:30. That's when pregame coverage begins. Tonight the Cubs start their series out west against the Giants. First pitch is going to be at 9:05. Pat and Ron got the call. Zach Zabin got your pregame. Game is supposed to start at 8:45. That's what it says everywhere. But ultimately, there's a pregame ceremony that's going to be taking place at 8:45 and pushing it back a bit. So that's why that thing's happening. But the good thing is, you download the Odyssey app. We're going to be there for you whenever the game begins. Let's go back out to the phone lines, though. 312-644-6767. You can text in as well. We're talking to about Pete Carmstrong and just, you know, thoughts on him after the weekend. Two Iron was upset. Let's see how Dylan is. Dylan, talk to me, man. Thoughts on Pete Carmstrong?
Hey, man, how you doing?
Hanging in there.
Good. The reason I'm calling is you guys are, and everybody, we want these prospects up. We want to see PCA up. We want to see him playing. We want to see Canario up. We want to see him playing. We want to see Casey up. We want to see him playing. We all say, oh, we'll deal with them failing or slumping or not being the all-stars that we expect them to be. But then as soon as they slump, we want them down. We want to put them back down in the minors because they're not cutting it.
Yeah, do me a favor, Dylan, real quick. Just turn on your radio because I want to be able to hear you clearly because you're bringing up some good points. But when you look at a guy like PCA, you know, because Robbie, our producer today, Robbie Triano, he talked about the fact that, or asked the question, did you feel like you're bringing him up too much? You want to see him, but do you feel like they brought him up too quickly or do you like the pace that he's at right now?
No, I like the pace that he's at right now.
Okay. Yeah. See? So
these kids are going to fail. They're not going to be Ryan Sandberg right off. Ryan Sandberg wasn't Ryan Sandberg the first 3 weeks that he played. So.
Yeah. I see what you did there. Yeah. I mean, it's tough. They're young, but again, it's about the expectations. You know, he's good enough. That's why I said he's good enough to be on the show. At the show, but again, it's the expectation that you placed on him. He can't be the savior of the team. Will he eventually? Can he grow into that? Yes, but should you put that pressure on him? I think that's where, you know, we as fans sometimes struggle. I like the fact that nobody's doing that to Roma Dunze. Had he been, had the Bears not had the number one pick in the draft, and they just had, you know, the number nine pick, then they would probably be putting that pressure on them to break some records. But you know, they don't have to in the present. Let's go back out to the phone lines, though. See what people think about Pete Carmstrong. Let's go to Matt. Matt, Pete Carmstrong.
Yeah, hello.
Yeah, what's up, man? So, thoughts on Pete Carmstrong, specifically over the weekend? You know, thoughts on his play?
You know, I tell you, he could do a lot better. But as we're playing right now, I'd like to give him a little bit more time. One of the metrics that I look at that actually shines a little bit of a better light is WAR. His DWAR right now is 0.6, which is actually top 20 in the National League for everybody.
Oh, wow.
And WAR is something where you play more, your WAR goes up. So he's got less than half the play appearances as everybody else on the team pretty much it starts. And he's a 0.4 total. So if you doubled him, he'd be a 0.8, which puts him in the top six on the team. So look at it that way, and I'm willing to give him more time.
Okay. I like that. You see he's making the play, so that's where the WAR comes, and then you know, I like it. Get him some more plate appearance. I think that's obviously what everyone is trying to do right now as they're putting him into the lineup. And it'll be interesting to see how it continues to pan out. But again, I'm here for it. I'm here for the growth, the maturation, and the brightening of a star in real time. Here for that. Not here for us putting expectations and then being upset if he doesn't necessarily reach them. Speaking of expectations, the Bulls will have a new player on their team on Wednesday as they draft 11th. But who knows what they'll do if they either go up or down. But there will be a new player. What expectations will be placed on him? And can he contribute to this Bulls team at a high level? For that, we get to talk to former NBA champ our guy Will Perdue from NBC Sports Chicago is going to be hanging out with us next. Don't go anywhere. It's 670 The Score.
With 16 seconds to go, Highsmith over the timeline. They're just going to dribble it out. The Miami Heat advance and will take on the Boston Celtics on Sunday in the opening game of a best of seven, with the 8-seed Heat taking on the number one seed, the 62-win Boston Celtics.
We're back live with more Gabe Ramirez on 670 The Score.
What a painful memory. Just remembering the end of the season, how it ended. But there are new things to look forward to, including a new player in Josh Giddey. And we get to talk to about him, about the upcoming draft, and what this team will look like in the offseason. With our next guest, he joins us now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com, analyst for NBC Sports Chicago, of course, 13-year NBA career with four rings, two different teams, our guy, Will Perdue. Will, what's going on, man? Good to talk to you again.
Oh, it's an exciting time of the year, even though the season is officially over.
That it is. All right, initial thoughts. Bulls not getting a draft pick with Caruso going to OKC. Will, you there?
Yep, there we go. Sorry, I switched over when I got in the car. You
no
got
worries.
Me?
No worries. I got you. I asked the question again just so that way you can have a second. Josh Giddey comes to the Bulls. Caruso goes out. Bulls don't get a draft pick with the pick or with the trade. Thoughts on the whole thing when it went down?
Well, I was actually with my son that night, and we were and he just yelled, "Dad, the Bulls just made a trade with OKC. They sent Caruso for Josh Giddey." And the first word out of my mouth was, "And."
Okay.
He goes, "What do you mean, and?"
Oh, you meant said, and.
Like, are there any draft picks? What do you mean, and? Is it straight up? What'd you think I said?
Oh, no. Oh, no. Well, they got an infinity amount of picks right now, and I think that's why all of us were shocked that not one came back.
Right. But that was my initial reaction. I thought, like, there had to be picks associated with that. Caruso to OKC for Giddey and some picks. But it wasn't. So initially I was like, oh, man. So it's like, you're losing championship caliber player, your best on-ball defender, a leader, a three-point shooter that shot 40% last year. And that was probably my biggest takeaway was Giddey shoots 33%. Caruso shot 40%.
And getting better. His three-point shot was getting a bit more consistent than it had been in the last couple of seasons.
Right. But since the trade, I can honestly say that I've had some thoughts about maybe this is part of an equation of something bigger that's going to happen either on draft night or close to draft, close to after draft night in regards to what it is that Arturas and Mark Eversley are planning to do moving forward. Because I went back to, you know, when they had the postseason press conference, right?
Mm-hmm.
And AK acknowledged it's not working. We need to make changes. I don't think this is just it.
Mm-mm.
I think there's a lot more to come. But now I think this is just the tip of the iceberg, and it's really piqued my interest. So the question is now, what exactly will this roster look like by the time training camp starts in late September?
And that's the interesting question, because you're not sure how they're viewing this turnaround, right? Is it fire sale, like, where it's like, hey, let's just get new pieces in so that we can shuffle later on? Or is it, let's get assets in that could help us win in the present? I think that, to me, is the biggest question, Will, when it comes to what this roster will look like come August, September in training camp.
You know, I think what they're attempting to do, and we don't know if this is, you know, feasible, is they're trying to, and to use their terminology, trying to maintain a certain level of competitiveness. Why they, I don't want to use the word rebuild because I don't think they want to go that route. I think retool is probably a better word, because I think that instead of doing it through the draft, because I'm not sure the quality of player they're going to be able to get, you know, with the 11th pick, I think that they're really, and I don't have any inside knowledge. I'm just, you know, when you talk about this trade and the timing of this trade and the fact that, okay, we're talking about youth now, mm-hmm. that they're trying to get better but still maintain a certain level of competitiveness, why they turn over the roster that they've admitted does not work.
Let me ask you this, Will. Because I do think that fire sale is on the table. I do think that. You know, when you're talking about seeing some of the, you know, obviously, you know, they're just rumors, but seeing what's out there for Zach, and obviously not understanding yet if they're going to, you know, give the extension to DeMar. Could this be a tank for Cooper Flagg situation?
Well, it could be. But if it is, they're never going to admit it.
Right. We know that.
Because I think, let's just go back for a second and think about, let's kind of break down this trade for a second. If, because initially then, after thinking about it, I was like, maybe they're planning on using Giddy in a package on draft night to kind of get draft picks in the future, or somebody else or something like that. That's all to be determined, right? Mm-hmm. But let's just hypothetically say that they keep Giddy. I think that the person, in my opinion, that benefits the most from this trade is Coby White. Because as well as Coby has adapted to becoming a point guard, and this, that process took a while, as well as he's done, his ball handling, his ability to, you know, do a better job with the pick and roll, his passing. Think about how much better now he becomes as a three-point shooter if Josh Giddey can take some of the ball handling responsibility out of Kobe's hands, and then you can kind of run some plays off ball for Coby, how much more of a threat he becomes, because in my opinion, quite honestly, he's their best three-point shooter.
Yeah, but Will, that's the frustrating part about the move, specifically from that lens, because you say to yourself, okay, well, you knew the Bulls were lacking this point guard presence after Lonzo Ball got hurt, and over these last couple of seasons, you didn't trade your assets to bring in a guy like Josh Giddey, when that could have been the case with when Zach was there, you know, and DeMar and Vooch playing together, and you needed that facilitator type. So to your point, right? Like, he's going to come in now, be that for the Bulls, and Coby White benefits from that. But it's just a bit frustrating because you wish that move would have happened a little bit earlier.
Yeah, because in the way you talk about it, you ask yourself, wasn't, you know, because we talked about, okay, this trade has happened, and I even admitted that I thought that, you know, when I was with my son, so Josh Giddey, and because, you know, we know how many draft picks Oklahoma City has, you start to wonder, okay, so what would have Caruso's value actually been at the trade deadline of this past season compared to what you actually got now?
Yeah, I mean,
that's what we don't know, and what we don't know is what was actually offered. The only thing that we do know is that a lot of teams were showing interest in Caruso. What we don't know is what was offered in order to make that happen. Whatever was offered, the Bulls didn't think was enough.
Yeah, we're talking to Will Perdue here, 670 The Score. Gabe Ramirez hanging out with you. You know, Will, the Bulls, you know, do have a young team with some young talent, right? Like Julian Phillips, we liked what we saw of him before he got hurt at the end of the season. We saw him kind of making those strides. You saw Dalen Terry looking a little more comfortable out there. We know he's been working with Sean Livingston. But, like, how much can another talent, specifically at 11, a young talent, really help this team? Is it just about adding depth and pieces, or, it's been, or can this 11 slot fill something up for the Chicago Bulls squad?
That's a good question. Listen, as far as from a talent level, when you talk about win shares, I think this trade with OKC is pretty much a lateral move, in my opinion. Okay. So that means that we're still looking at, as of right now, with the roster that the Bulls have, we're looking at play-in, mm-hmm. right? They're a play-in tournament team. But I do think that they're still planning, whether they can actually execute it or not, make considerable changes in the roster. What you've talked about is, Julian Phillips and whatnot. You're still talking about guys that are very green, guys that need a lot of experience. And the question is, where do you find that? If you were trying to maintain a competitive atmosphere, meaning that, you try to win, half your games, which they weren't able to do last year, you're trying to win 39, at least 41 games. How much time do those guys actually get? I like Julian Phillips. What we don't know is how long is it really going to take him to develop? I fully believe, Dave, that, the Bulls are going to bring back Patrick Williams because of what he's shown in glimpses, because he still has that potential. But what's his role? How much has he changed last year, also knowing that he's coming back off an injury? So there's still a lot of unknowns, which on one hand is kind of exciting, but on the other hand is aggravating, and it's just a wait-and-see attitude.
And that's the tough thing about it, right? Especially with, Patrick Williams. I think it's going to be another Kobe White situation, and hopefully it ends up the same way where, you get a favorable contract with Pat Will, and then he outperforms it, right? And quickly, because for whatever reason something clicks. That would be awesome to see. But Bulls have to make another decision on DeMar. I mentioned it earlier, Will. In your eyes, is it worth it to give him the extension? Because something that I worry about with DeMar, especially in the twilight of his career, if he sticks with the Bulls, is him being ball dominant and kind of taken away from, maybe some shots or some opportunities from some players that probably need it a bit more than he does.
Yeah, and that's also where I think you hit it on the head.
With 16 seconds to go, Highsmith over the timeline is just going to dribble it out. The Miami Heat advance and will take on the Boston Celtics on Sunday in the opening game of a best of seven, with the 8th seed Heat taking on the number 1 seed, the 62-win Boston Celtics.
We're back live with more Gabe Ramirez on 670 The Score.
What a painful memory. Just remembering the end of the season, how it ended. But there are new things to look forward to, including a new player in Josh Giddey. And we get to talk about him, about the upcoming draft, and what this team will look like in the offseason. With our next guest, he joins us now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com, analyst for NBC Sports Chicago, of course, 13-year NBA career with 4 rings, 2 different teams, our guy, Will Perdue. Will, what's going on, man? Good to talk to you again.
Oh, it's an exciting time of the year, even though the season is officially over.
That it is. All right, initial thoughts. Bulls not getting a draft pick with Caruso going to OKC. Will, you there?
Yep, there we go. Sorry, I switched over when I got in the car. You
no
got
worries.
Me?
No worries. I got you. I asked the question again just so that way you can have a second. Josh Giddey comes to the Bulls. Caruso goes out. Bulls don't get a draft pick with the pick or with the trade. Thoughts on the whole thing when it went down?
Well, I was actually with my son that night, and we were and he just yelled, "Dad, the Bulls just made a trade with OKC. They sent Caruso for Josh Giddey." And the first word out of my mouth was, "And."
Okay.
He goes, "What do you mean, and?"
Oh, you meant said, and.
Like, are there any draft picks? What do you mean dead. And? Is it straight up? What'd you think I said?
Oh, no. Oh, no. Well, that they got an infinity amount of picks right now, and I think that's why all of us were shocked that not one came back.
Right. But that was my initial reaction. I thought, like, there had to be picks associated with that. Caruso to OKC for Giddy and some picks. But it wasn't. So initially I was like, oh, man. So it's like you're losing championship caliber player, your best on-ball defender, a leader, a three-point shooter that shot 40% last year. And that was probably my biggest takeaway was Giddy shoots 33%. Caruso shot 40%.
And getting better. His three-point shot was getting a bit more consistent than it had been in the last couple of seasons.
Right. But since the trade, I can honestly say that I've had some thoughts about maybe this is part of an equation of something bigger that's going to happen either on draft night or close to draft, close to after draft night in regards to what it is that Arturas and Mark Eversley are planning to do moving forward. Because I went back to, you know, when they had the postseason press conference, right?
Mm-hmm.
And AK acknowledged it's not working. We need to make changes. I don't think this is just it.
Mm-mm.
I think there's a lot more to come. But now I think this is just the tip of the iceberg, and it's really piqued my interest. So the question is now, what exactly will this roster look like by the time training camp starts in late September?
And that's the interesting question, because you're not sure how they're viewing this turnaround, right? Is it fire sale, like, where it's like, hey, let's just get new pieces in so that we can shuffle later on? Or is it, let's get assets in that could help us win in the present? I think that, to me, is the biggest question, Will, when it comes to what this roster will look like come August, September in training camp.
You know, I think what they're attempting to do, and we don't know if this is, you know, feasible, is they're trying to, and to use their terminology, trying to maintain a certain level of competitiveness. Why they, I don't want to use the word rebuild, because I don't think they want to go that route. I think retool is probably a better word, because I think that instead of doing it through the draft, because I'm not sure the quality of player they're going to be able to get, you know, with the 11th pick, I think that they're really, and I don't have any inside knowledge. I'm just, you know, when you talk about this trade and the timing of this trade and the fact that, okay, we're talking about youth now,
mm-hmm.
that they're trying to get better but still maintain a certain level of competitiveness, why they turn over the roster that they've admitted does not work.
Let me ask you this, Will. Because I do think that fire sale is on the table. I do think that. You know, when you're talking about seeing some of the, you know, obviously, you know, they're just rumors, but seeing what's out there for Zach, and obviously not understanding yet if they're going to, you know, give the extension to DeMar. Could this be a tank for Cooper Flagg situation?
Well, it could be, but if it is, they're never going to admit it.
Right. We know that.
Because I think, let's just go back for a second and think about, let's kind of break down this trade for a second. If, because initially then, after thinking about it, I was like, maybe they're planning on using Giddy in a package on draft night to kind of get draft picks in the future, or somebody else, or something like that. That's all to be determined, right?
Mm-hmm.
But let's just hypothetically say that they keep Giddy. I think that the person, in my opinion, that benefits the most from this trade is Coby White. Because as well as Coby has adapted to becoming a point guard, and this that process took a while, as well as he's done, his ball handling, his ability to, you know, do a better job with the pick and roll, his passing. Think about how much better now he becomes as a three-point shooter if Josh Giddey can take some of the ball handling responsibility out of Kobe's hands, and then you can kind of run some plays off ball for Coby, how much more of a threat he becomes, because in my opinion, quite honestly, he's their best three-point shooter.
Yeah, but Will, that's the frustrating part about the move, specifically from that lens, because you say to yourself, okay, well, you knew the Bulls were lacking this point guard presence after Lonzo Ball got hurt, and over these last couple of seasons, you didn't trade your assets to bring in a guy like Josh Giddey, when that could have been the case when Zach was there, you know, and DeMar and Vooch playing together, and you needed that facilitator type. So to your point, right? Like, he's going to come in now, be that for the Bulls, and Coby White benefits from that. But it's just a bit frustrating because you wish that move would have happened a little bit earlier.
Yeah, because in the way you talk about it, you ask yourself, wasn't, you know, because we talked about, okay, this trade has happened, and I even admitted that I thought that, you know, when I was with my son, so Josh Giddey, and because, you know, we know how many draft picks Oklahoma City has, you start to wonder, okay, so what would have Caruso's value actually been at the trade deadline of this past season compared to what you actually got now?
Yeah, I mean,
That's what we don't know, and what we don't know is what was actually offered. The only thing that we do know is that a lot of teams were showing interest in Caruso. What we don't know is what was offered in order to make that happen. Whatever was offered, the Bulls didn't think was enough.
Yeah, we're talking to Will Perdue here, 670 The Score. Gabe Ramirez hanging out with you. You know, Will, the Bulls, you know, do have a young team with some young talent, right? Like Julian Phillips, we liked what we saw of him before he got hurt at the end of the season. We saw him kind of making those strides. You saw Dalen Terry looking a little more comfortable out there. We know he's been working with Sean Livingston. But, like, how much can another talent, specifically at 11, a young talent, you know, really help this team? Is it just about adding depth and pieces? Or, you know, it's been, you know, or can this 11 slot fill something up for the Chicago Bulls squad?
That's a good question. You know, listen, as far as from a talent level, when you talk about win shares, I think this trade with OKC is pretty much a lateral move, in my opinion. Okay? So that means that we're still looking at, as of right now, with the roster that the Bulls have, we're looking at play-in. Mm-hmm. Right? They're a play-in tournament team. But I do think that they're still planning, whether they can actually execute it or not, make considerable changes in the roster. What you've talked about is, you know, Julian Phillips and whatnot. You're still talking about guys that are very green, guys that need a lot of experience. And the question is, where do you find that? If you are trying to maintain a competitive atmosphere, meaning that, you know, you try to win, you know, half your games, which they were unable to do last year. You know, you're trying to win 39, you know, at least 41 games. How much time do those guys actually get? I like Julian Phillips. What we don't know is how long is it really going to take him to develop? I fully believe, Dave, that, you know, the Bulls are going to bring back Patrick Williams because of what he's shown in glimpses, because he still has that potential. But what's his role? How much has he changed last year, also knowing that he's coming back off an injury? So there's still a lot of unknowns, which on one hand is kind of exciting, but on the other hand is, you know, is aggravating, and it's just a wait-and-see attitude.
And that's a that's the tough thing about it, right? Especially with, you know, Patrick Williams. I think it's going to be another Kobe White situation, and hopefully it ends up the same way where, you know, you get a favorable contract with Pat Will, and then he outperforms it, right? And quickly, because for whatever reason something clicks. That would be awesome to see. But Bulls have to make another decision on DeMar. You know, I mentioned it earlier, Will. In your eyes, is it worth it to give him the extension? Because something that I worry about with DeMar, especially in you know, the twilight of his career, if he sticks with the Bulls, is him being ball dominant and kind of taken away from, you know, maybe some shots or some opportunities from some players that probably need it a bit more than he does.
Yeah, and that's also where I think you hit it on the head. That I don't want to say, because this isn't DeMar's fault, okay? You can't sit here and say, you have to blame it on DeMar. This isn't, you know, it's just because of, you know, how he plays, right? He is a ball-dominant player.
Yeah.
So because of that, he plays a certain way. And that, unfortunately, affects how Patrick Williams plays. If you're going to bring back Patrick Williams, which I think they should do.
Agreed.
Then I don't think it's in the best interest of not only Patrick Williams, but the future of this team to bring back DeMar DeRozan. But at the same time, you don't necessarily want to let him walk for nothing. Best case scenario is you could do a sign and trade and get some value back.
And that's ultimately what the Bulls would want to do in the event that that happens. But again, I think, you know, when you're looking at the construct of the team, it's going to be interesting. All right, Will, before I let you go, you know, there's another seven-footer in this draft that, you know, the Bulls are linked to. Of course, I'm talking about Donovan Clingan from UConn. Did you get a chance to watch him in the tournament? And if so, you know, what would you think if the Bulls got aggressive and moved up to get a guy like that?
I would, quite honestly, prefer to see them kind of go and, like, get a big that's a little more athletic, like a Precious Achiuwa from the Knicks, or I was just getting ready, and I just forgot his name, the center from the Brooklyn Nets that, you know, my understanding is available.
Claxton?
Claxton, yep.
Okay.
I think those guys could be, considering how this roster is now being constructed, when you talk about Kobe White, Io, P. Will, Giddy, talking about somebody that could fit into a team that needs to play, you know, a run-and-gun style, to me, he would fit perfectly and already has NBA experience. You wouldn't have to wait for somebody to develop. He's still developing. Yet he's been in the league long enough, you know what you're getting.
You're looking at him like a, would you look at him like a, just a replacement for Andre Drummond, or a guy that could play the five where Vooch plays the four?
A guy that could play the five, because yeah, he's not necessarily a great shooter, but like you see, the Bulls used to have him play for the Dallas Mavericks this year. It's a rim runner, guy that you do a lot of screen and roll.
Yeah, Daniel Gafford.
Mm-hmm. Daniel Gafford, that can finish at the rim, but also as a shot blocker, can run the floor, and, you know, can also, you know, provide better defense on the perimeter for the screen rolls where Vooch struggles.
Yeah, be an extra hand. Oh, it's going to be fun. Like you said, it's a fun time, Will. I know the draft is coming up tomorrow. We're going to be doing some extra coverage, and I'm sure you'll be on these airwaves talking about the moves that the Chicago Bulls will be making, man. I appreciate you hanging out with us and giving me some of your time, and always enjoy talking to you, Will.
All right, you too. Thank you very much for reaching out, and looking forward to Wednesday.
All right. Will Perdue, NBA champion Will Perdue, knows a thing or two about rings on the finger and what it takes to get to the promised land. Oh, man, good stuff there. Always love talking to Will. If I can talk hoops with guys like that, him and Bill Wennington, I love when they're on the station and I get a chance to chop it up with them. It's great stuff there. All right, don't forget, Cubs pregame begins at 8:30, first pitch, 9:05 p.m. And, of course, who is on the bump looking to get their first win of the season? Justin Steele. I'll give you some thoughts about JS and if I think he's going to get his first victory of the season. Do you? 312-644-6767. Phone lines are open. Would love to get your thoughts on Justin and the Cubs team as a whole, and we'll take your thoughts and mine, and we'll hear those on the other side. Don't go anywhere. It's Gabe Ramirez right here on 670 The Score.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.